So today we get to conclude our three-week series called The Hunger Games. And the idea is based around that we all have eternal things that we hunger for. Eternal things like joy and meaning and purpose and relationships and an identity formed in God. And during this series, we are comparing the book of Ecclesiastes with the book of Philippians, right? And Ecclesiastes tells us what life is like under the sun, sun meaning S-U-N. And when they talk about life under the sun, it means life without God. Just doing your own thing, making it up as you go along, whatever works for you. And he compares it, we compare it with Philippians, which talks a lot about joy and living under the direction of God. So in this process of moving from living under the sun to living under joy in God is the process of sanctification. That's the Wesleyan word we use for that process. So how do we know we've got this hole? How do we know that there's a spiritual hunger? Well, let me give you a little bit of a story, a little analogy here. One day there was a boy out flying a kite. And boy, this boy was getting that kite to fly high in the sky. And a man comes in to him and he says, what are you doing? And the boy says, I'm flying a kite. And the guy responds, well, man, I don't even think I see the kite. I mean, are you sure it's up there? And the boy goes, oh yeah, it's up there. I can feel its tug, right? And so I believe that we all have this tug going on in our souls that says, you know, there's got to be something more. There's got to be something to feed that hole in my life. And we believe the Bible says that this is the spiritual hunger that God has given us. And we feel its spiritual tug in our lives. So the first week of this series, I talked about wisdom. And wisdom is a really good word. A lot of good things to say about wisdom. But this scripture, even Ecclesiastes, tells us that not all wisdom is good. The more knowledge you have about life, you think, wow, I have all this more knowledge, but it doesn't still, I have all this knowledge, but I've still got this hole. So it's frustrating when you just build up all this earthly wisdom but don't have godly wisdom. Philippians tells us that we have to look at God as our teacher, and God is committed to teaching us every day of our lives. So we must learn to listen to God. Some of us have spent this last month journaling as a way to better listen to God. The second week I talked about work and pleasure. And Solomon warned us of the potential for futility in these areas of life. He warned us about the unknowns of work, right? Jody shared some of that this morning. There's no guarantees. You could be the fastest runner, but if you fall or if you slip or if you get out of the gate too late, doesn't guarantee nothing. You could be the best worker in the world and you're not guaranteed the best paycheck. Someone can steal your ideas. It's dangerous to put all your hope in that. We get this competitive pride that starts to make life too selfish and too self-absorbed because of our making all our accomplishments and trying to achieve things. Pursuing pleasure is even worse, Solomon tells us. Because the more pleasure we get, the more we want. So the more we pursue more pleasure. So as unfulfilling as work can be, pleasure is even more dangerous. But Paul gave us some words, some scriptures to help us fulfill the hunger in our life. He gives us seven principles to cling to. And these seven principles we talked about were being unselfish, giving, humble, gentle, non-anxious, prayerful, and thankful. And when we live with these things in our life, the hole starts getting smaller. And we don't hunger as much because we're becoming unselfish, giving, humble, gentle, non-anxious, prayerful, and thankful. So we have Solomon and we have Paul as our teachers. You could say they're even our chefs, preparing us the food that will quench this hunger in our souls. So today I want to talk about time. Time. For everything, there is a season, right? You know that old song, right? For everything, turn, turn, turn. You know, some of us are old enough to remember that. Yeah. Some of us were grown-ups when we heard that, right? They're old enough. It tells us that everything in this life is relative, since nothing really lasts. You know, 3 weeks ago, we had a drummer, Jerry Anderson, sitting up there playing drums. He may not have felt the best that day, but he was joking around and having a good time. 2 days later, we didn't know if Jerry was going to live. It was that quick. And that's what the lesson is here. You just don't really know. You're not promised tomorrow. You don't know what each day is going to bring. Luckily, Jerry's doing pretty good, and we're very thankful for that. So Solomon warns us Solomon tells us what not to do with our time on earth, and Paul tells us what to do with our time on earth. You know, Solomon is very quick to tell us about all the things that he tried in life that just didn't work. He says, even the happiest moments of life are fleeting and far between. Ecclesiastes 6, 3 through 6 says this. A man may have 100 children and live many years. Yet no matter how he lives, if he cannot enjoy his prosperity and does not receive proper burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. It comes without meaning. It departs in darkness, and in darkness its name is shrouded. Though it never saw the sun or knew anything, and it has more rest than does this man. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice over but fails to enjoy his prosperity, do not all go to the same place? And then skipping ahead, Ecclesiastes 9:11, the second half of that says, the race is swift or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise or wealth to the brilliant, but time and chance happen to them all. I know maybe some people don't believe in chance, which I can understand that argument because God's definitely involved in our world, and he's the providence of God wooing us and shaping things. And we believe there's also an enemy attacking us and doing things as well. But I still hold fast in my personal belief that there is chance. When you have a world full of people with free will, there is chance. Doesn't mean there's luck, but there is chance. There's very little that we can count on with all these people having free will. But there is birth, and there is death. And taxes, of course, taxes. It is that time of year. So the Apostle Paul has quite an unusual take on death. It's interesting because whether he lives or dies, he's kind of fine with either. Philippians 1:21 says, For to me to live is Christ, but to die is gain. He kind of lays out the pros and the cons. If I die, I get to be with Jesus, and I kind of get free of all this. But if I stay here, then I can further the gospel and make a difference here. But he almost surprises us with the joy that death is going to bring. Right? It's almost like he's more concerned right now with the gospel than death itself. He would state later in Philippians 3:20, our citizenship is in heaven. Wow. You know, that's just 5 words, but it says so much. So I'm going to break down what that means for us in our lives. And they're all kind of interrelated, so they kind of overlap a little bit. Number one, that someday Christians will get new eternal bodies. Yay! Are you ready for a new body? Yeah, that'd be great. I hope mine's fast. Always wanted to be super fast, right? I don't know. Number two, eternal bodies mean there's no more spiritual hunger. I don't know if we get to heaven or when Christ returns and establishes his kingdom, if it's going to be a sense where we don't have that hunger at all, which probably that true, or maybe we're just constantly having the food in front of us to quench it. Either way, it's going to be great. We'll be able to enjoy it. There's got to be that yearning for something we can never get, feelings that sometimes we get on earth. Number three, time waits for no man or woman. We must be wise with our choices on earth. Your choices matter. There are consequences to your choices in this life, and I believe there'll be consequences for your choice in the next life that you make here and now. Number four, we must live with the end in mind. Okay, now I know there's a big football game on today, but I want to talk basketball because, you know, I'm a basketball guy. And the Celtics are on TV today at 2, which is really the most important game today. So let's say you are playing in a basketball game and you're down by 33 points at halftime. I say 33 because that's Larry Bird's number, so it's good. Now, teams have come from behind from 33 points over halftime, but it doesn't happen too often. But let's pretend something. Let's pretend that God has given you inside information. And you know for a fact your team's going to come back and win. Nobody else knows that. Wouldn't your attitude, your demeanor at halftime be different? You'd be like, come on, guys. It's okay. It's all going to work out. We're going to win. Believe me, trust me. This is what it's like to live the Christian life. We know who wins the game. And even though we can starve and we can get frustrated with this life and all the trials we have to face and all that hunger we deal with, we ultimately know it's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We win the game. Number five, God is our timekeeper, and he is also, again, our chef. You know, sometimes in life, God has a different way of working each day, each moment with each of us differently. And there are moments where God says, you know, today, I'm not going to feed that hole, even though I know you should try to always feed the hole. God doesn't always satisfy you like he wants, you want him to. He says, you know what, I'm going to test you today. I'm going to let you yearn a little bit more. I'm going to let you long in your desire for fulfillment a little bit more. And I'm not going to get, and this is the test. Will you follow me anyways? Now, some days he gives us a nibble, a little meal. He gives us, yeah, okay, that's enough. That gets me till tomorrow. I always pray that Sunday morning is at least a meal for you spiritually. Now, I realize, much as I hate to say it, that in 2 days from now, you're going to have no idea what I said. But my prayer is, you'd have gotten something on Sunday morning to get you to a couple days more. Right? You know? And then it's whatever else you can do, or whatever else the church can do, or whatever else you can do to fill that hunger in your soul to get you a few more days. Now, some days, though, God will give you a feast. And that feast will, oh, man, you just carry, you're in cloud nine for weeks. Oh, man, so charged up about Jesus this for now because God just given me this wonderful gift. So, but you got to roll with each punch. You got to be able to accept what God gives you. Sometimes it's a little bit of starvation. Sometimes it's a huge feast. But each can be meaningful. Each can be a step of growth for you. Your job is to satisfy it with spiritual things, Christian things, but it's God's ultimate decide how much he's going to give you. Again, our spiritual craving, number six, will only last for a time on this earth. And the scriptures say, Solomon says, you can go the route I did for a while. You can try that. But I'm telling you, nope, it doesn't work. Or you can go the route that Paul did and says, you know what, whether I live or die, it doesn't matter. I'm good. The choice is ours.